Don't be afraid of the dark. Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Hello and welcome to episode 23. I'm Paul.
And I'm Ashley.
How have we been? Well,
we're here.
Yeah. So, in this episode, I don't have any fun facts or anything.
Boo!
For this episode, yeah.
Boo!
So, I'll call this the haunted history of Wilson's Creek National Battlefield.
Okay.
And I have a voiceover for that. Haunted history or some shit. Okay. I don't know. I made it before.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, on accident, but works for this episode. What are we drinking today?
I am drinking a pre-mixed cocktail that we found at Macadoodles. It's called Flybird. I bought it because it was pretty and because it was prickly pear cactus flavored, but it's a pre-mixed margarita. But I just saw on the label that it's a wine cocktail, and that might explain why it tastes funny. It's 15% alcohol by volume, though, so that might also explain why it tastes funny. Yeah. I had to cut it with seltzer water. Mm. I wish I had some, like, Diet 7-Up or something, but all I had was seltzer water, so.
You ran out of Coke, or?
It's cherry.
Oh.
I don't want the cherry to compete with the prickly pear. All right, get all right. A life.
All right. Well, I am drinking a Beatbox pink lemonade alcoholic beverage. It's got 11.1% alcohol.
Holy shit!
Yeah. It's basically a juice box for grown-ups.
Yeah.
And they're freaking delicious.
When my brother and sister-in-law were in town from California, my mom lives walking distance from a gas station. And so they would literally like walk up to that gas station every day and buy those beet boxes.
Yeah.
My family is low-key a bunch of high-functioning alcoholics.
Yep, that's good.
It's okay.
Very, very alcoholic.
I guess. Yeah. They're really good, the beatboxes.
Yeah, they're very delicious.
I just wanted to try this cocktail because we had seen it at Price Cutter when we were on a hunt for the Fresca.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. The Fresca Fiasco.
Fresca Fiasco. But we had seen this cocktail at Price Cutter, and it was on, like, the bottom shelf. I just happened, because I'm a magpie. I like pretty things. I see the bottle. I pick it up, and I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I think it was the blood orange flavor.
Yeah.
Don't ask me how I remember that exactly. But I pick it up, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, this is pretty. It's dusty, so it must be good.
Yeah.
Because nobody buys anything that's good.
It's true.
Everything good dies.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. We say Fresca Fiasco because apparently the only flavor they make now is grapefruit, and we were trying to find the original.
Yeah. We literally went to, five different stores between Clever, Springfield, and Republic.
Yeah.
Looking for Fresca because we were looking online and it was like Walmart has original Fresca in stock. And then you scroll through and there's like other flavors. But then you get to Walmart and they only have the one flavor. Right. We figured out that Fresca rebranded. They're packaged as seltzer water, but it's still soda.
Yeah.
It still has aspartame in it. So. Anyways.
So, yeah. So there's a ton of history about the Battle of Wilson's Creek. I had to condense so much not to make this a 2-hour history podcast.
Okay.
So here we go.
History.
On August 10th, 1861, Brigadier General Ben McCullough led the Western Army in battle in southwestern Missouri. He disliked wearing uniforms and wore a black velvet suit instead.
What? Who wears velvet in August?
Don't know. During the battle, he led from the front and was almost shot by a Union sentry, but Corporal Henry H. Gentiles saved him with a good shot. McCullough then ordered a charge and led his army from the front. Brigadier General Nathaniel Lyon, his opponent, also led from the front and was killed an hour later, making him the first Union general to die in battle. The Battle of Wilson's Creek was fought just 20 days after the Union's defeat in Virginia and was the second major Confederate victory of the war. It played a crucial role in the struggle for Missouri and the Trans-Mississippi Theater. The battlefield is now a national park and is called Wilson's Creek National Battlefield. The clash at Wilson's Creek was unusual during the Civil War. Missouri Governor Claiborne Fox Jackson favored the Confederacy and used the state's militia to threaten the federal arsenal in St. Louis. Nathaniel Lyon captured the state militia without a fight, but a riot occurred as he marched his prisoners through the city, resulting in over 100 civilian casualties.
Damn.
This led to Governor Jackson gaining significant power to defend the state and appointing Sterling Price as a major general. Many volunteers in the reorganized militia hoped Missouri would join the Confederacy. And I'm glad it did not.
Well, plenty of Missourians.
Yeah.
No, that's the... Okay, that was something that irritated the fuck out of me. The entire film.
Said
Missouri, but anytime it was Missourians, he said Missourians.
Yeah, yeah. So we visited the park.
Yeah.
Recently. And we watched a short film about the history of it, according to one of the survivors' diaries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they got the narrator. Oh, my God.
He said anytime he said the word Missouri, he said Missouri, which.
I hate it.
So many fucking people around here, around these here parts, say that. I literally, when I was working at Chase, there was a woman who worked on my team that, like, she would answer the phone. Whenever you answered the phone, you, hello, this is so-and-so from Springfield, Missouri. How can I assist you?
Yeah.
And she would say Missouri, and then you knew people questioned her on it because she's like, nope, that's how it's actually pronounced. It's pronounced Missouri. Anyone who says Missouri is ignorant. She would literally say that.
People are stupid.
Oh my God. Anyway, not to go off on a tangent about that, but then it, like, when it comes to, again, describing people who live in Missouri, Missourians.
Yeah.
So why is it not Missourians?
I have no idea.
If it's Missouri, why not Missouri? I know. I'm.
It irritates the shit out of me. I don't know.
Anywho. That's not the hill I want to die on.
Lyon quickly attacked the Missouri state government before they could prepare for war. He had help from Kansas and sent troops to take over the capital and break up enemy camps. There were some battles, and Lyon ended up with 7,000 soldiers in Springfield. This helped secure important transportation networks for the Union, but Lyon's army was far from a supply line and running low on food. Many soldiers only enlisted for 90 days and would soon leave. The new leader in Missouri told Lyon to retreat, but Lyon refused. Lyon had a tough opponent camped only 9 miles away from Springfield. The opponent was the Missouri State Guard, who retreated southward when Lyon attacked. The State Guard then got help from the Confederate forces in Arkansas, led by Ben McCullough. They moved their troops into Missouri and camped at Wilson's Creek on August 6th.
Damn. It kills me that schools in the area are named after Confederate generals. To be fair, there are also Union generals that schools are named after as well. Yeah. But let's just not name our schools after people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Period.
Yep.
No Albert Einstein Elementary. No. Just pick an object. Apple Elementary School.
Yeah.
Lamp Elementary School.
Anyways, we can go on a whole tangent about.
I can go on a tangent about fucking anything.
I know you can. Both sides used patrols and spies to gather information for their next moves. The opposing forces had some unusual features. McCullough led the Western Army with the approval of others. His brigade was made up of Confederate troops and Arkansas state troops, commanded by Brigadier General N. Bart Pierce.
Did you say straight troops?
State.
You started to say straight troops, though.
Well, we won't go there, but anyways. Arkansas State Troops, commanded by Brigadier General N. Bart Pierce. The Confederates included soldiers from Louisiana and Texas, and most of them had old-fashioned muskets. They wore different outfits from military... No, wait. Some... God, I can't speak. They wore different outfits, some military, while others wore civilian clothes. Price's Missouri State Guard had 7,000 members, but only 5,000 of them had weapons.
Damn.
Yeah.
What?
Huh?
2,000 of your men did not have weapons?
Oh, yeah. 2,000, yeah.
What?
That is crazy.
Girl, go home.
They wore mostly civilian clothes with some pre-war militia uniforms. They also lacked ammunition, and many had worn out shoes. Some Cherokee and civilians joined the army, including soldiers, wives, and around 100 African-American servants. Nathaniel Lyon's army had many soldiers who were born in Germany or Ireland. The army also had volunteers from Kansas and Iowa.
Interesting. I knew about the German.
Right.
Because the German population in St. Louis.
Yeah.
But they didn't say anything about Irish immigrants. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, because that was... the Germans were part of Siegel's unit.
Yes.
I'll get there later. But,
okay. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying. I'm not trying to...
No, I know.
What's the word?
I don't know words. So
Spoiler.
I don't know. Spoiler?
Spoilers.
Oh, spoilers. Anyways, Nathaniel Lyon's army had many soldiers who were born in Germany or Ireland. The army also had volunteers from Kansas and Iowa. Some of Lyon's soldiers wore blue uniforms, but many of his Missouri troops wore gray overshirts.
Which may or may not have caused some confusion.
Yes. Lots of confusion. Each company in the 1st Iowa had a different color outfit. Lyon's soldiers were tired from marching, and many had replaced their uniforms with civilian clothes. Some officers in Lyon's army owned slaves, but Lyon himself was against slavery.
Wait, how are you... how are you fighting... on the Union side, currently owning slaves. Currently owning human beings as property.
I don't know.
The math's not mathin', as the kids say.
I know. Both the Union and Confederate forces planned to attack at the same time. The Confederate leader delayed the attack due to a storm, but failed to post guards after the storm passed. Meanwhile, the Union leaders debated their next move and feared being overtaken by the Confederates. They decided to attack the Confederate camp from two directions, which was risky, but they hoped to surprise the enemy. Some officers believed that one of the leaders suggested this plan to gain more prominence.
Gotta risk it to get the biscuit.
That's right. The Federals moved out of Springfield at night. Lyon's group had 4,300 men and 10 guns.
Cannons.
When I say guns, that means cannons. Okay. Yeah.
Not muskets. According
to the articles, they call them guns.
Okay. No, I just wanted to clarify, because I'm not a guns, ammunitions kind of, like, I don't know the first thing about any of that shit, except that they all are serve one purpose and one purpose alone, and anybody who says otherwise is delusional. Well, but, okay.
Anyway. What am I talking about?
You're talking about guns.
I know. Federals moved out of Springfield at night. Lyons Group had 4,300 men and 10 guns, and they went west before turning south and stopping north of their enemy. They rested there. Sigel's group had 1,100 men and six guns, and marched all night to a high ground position overlooking the southern end of McCullough's camp. Sigel was supposed to fire when he heard Lyons' guns. It's not known how much the Federals knew about the Southern Army's position. The Southern Army had 15 guns in four batteries, with most of their units positioned on a plateau on the east side of Wilson's Creek. The Missouri State Guard was scattered, and Price's men were organized with five mixed units labeled, quote, divisions, with different commanders. Most of the infantry and artillery from four of these divisions were camped together on flat ground near the William Edwards farm, while the cavalry was further south. James S. Raines' division was scattered with the infantry in one battery at the Caleb Manley farm, and the cavalry camped on a hill north of the Edwards farm, which later became known as Bloody Hill. Raines' headquarters was upstream from the rest of the camp at John Gibson's grist mill on the east bank of the creek. So yeah, this was a battlefield with like several houses on it. It had a mill, and they just basically took over these.
I mean, that was most Civil War battlefields, though.
No, I know. Yeah.
Like, they took place in the outskirts of towns.
Yeah. So yeah, they took over a lot of land while they were there. I'm sure I'll get into more of it later.
Destroying people's corn crops and wheat crops. And
they still have a big, healthy cornfield out there.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice. Anyways, early in the morning, Lyons soldiers went to the Elias B. Short farm near Bloody Hill. The enemy spotted them, and a small group of cavalry tried to stop them. Lyon brought in artillery and infantry to fight and won. From the top of the ridge, Lyon could see the main enemy camp across a steep ravine. He sent a small group straight ahead, and the rest of his soldiers went around to attack from the other side. He also sent Captain Plummer with some soldiers to protect their left side. When Sigel heard Lyon's gunfire in the morning, he ordered his artillery to attack. The attack caught the Southern cavalrymen off guard while they were cooking breakfast at the Sharp farm. The artillery barrage caused chaos, and the Southern soldiers fled, with over half of them leaving the battlefield entirely. Sigel and Lyon had successfully executed a surprise attack and maneuvered their forces into a winning position. The Federals were very successful, even more than they knew. McCullough and Price had breakfast together in a tent, but they couldn't hear the Federal artillery because of a strange noise.
What?
Yeah. Apparently there was a strange noise, and they didn't worry about it. I know we watched that film, but according to this article,
what kind of strange noise covers up, is loud enough to cover up artillery fire?
Who knows?
But you're not worried about it.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. The misophonia in me is like having a conniption fit right now.
Yep. It took a while before messengers told them that Federal soldiers were attacking Bloody Hill. McCullough also found out about Plummer's movement and Siegel's success.
It wasn't called Bloody Hill at that. It was only called Bloody Hill after.
Well, I know.
What was the actual name of the hill?
I told you. It was... Oh, you're going to make me go back. It was... said, on a hill north of Edwards Farm, which later became known as Bloody Hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's... And they're calling this Bloody Hill, just so you know.
Yes, I know. Sorry, I'm not trying to sound annoyed. I'm trying to look for my... You keep going. Keep going.
Okay. McCullough also found out about Plummer's movement and Siegel's success. He ordered Price to lead the Missouri State Guard up the hill while he dealt with the other threats. The Federals were very successful in their attack. Lyon's troops easily defeated the small units that Raines had positioned on Bloody Hill. The defeated state guardsmen joined their comrades at the bottom of the hill where Price was trying to organize his soldiers. Totten's, or Totten's, T-O-T-T-E-N-S, Totten's, artillery fired at the Pulaski Battery, and the enemy returned fire. Plummer noticed the commotion and decided to lead an attack on the Pulaski Battery, marching through a cornfield with his men. Siegel and his army moved south and noticed Southern cavalry near the Sharp farmhouse. He formed a line of battle and used his artillery to drive them away. The Federals continued their advance and reached the Wire Road, which put them in rear of McCullough's army. This happened around 8 a.m. So Wire Road was also known as Telegraph Road at the time.
Yes, yeah. Because telegraphs...
Yeah. Were wired. Yes. Wired, yeah.
But I was just going to say something about that, because I think the last episode we talked about a Wire Road, because that was also the Trail of Tears, and I went on a little tangent about why the fuck are all the Wire Roads? They all go east-west, but they're like miles... apart from each other.
It's basically this Wire Road. But it's because
the original Wire Road
is through the battlefield.
It was angled southwest, northwest.
Yeah, that's right.
It was not due east, west, north, south.
Yep. As the day went on, the Southerners gained an advantage in the battle. They sent Colonel James McIntosh and his troops to deal with the Federals led by Plummer. They clashed at the Ray Farm, but the Federals were hidden in the cornfield. McIntosh eventually led a charge that pushed the Federals back, threatening Lyon's forces. However, quick action from Lieutenant John V. Dubois and his artillery caused the Southerners to retreat, and the fighting in that area stopped with no clear winner. Now let's pause and talk about the Ray House.
The Ray House.
I wish it was open when we went.
When we go back, if it's not open, we're going to have to call.
Well, I looked it up and it said it's open whenever they feel like opening it.
The dude told Mom it's open while we were there. She asked. He told her, yes, it's open and tourable.
Well, it was locked.
And we get there and it's fucking locked.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucked. Anyways. By August 1861, many families had settled in Wilson's Creek, now known as Wilson... Okay. I guess back then it wasn't known as Wilson's Creek. So basically, families had settled near that creek, which is now known as Wilson's Creek.
What was it known as when people settled? Did the article not say?
It didn't say. It just said Wilson's Creek.
All right.
One of the most prominent families in the area was that of John and Roxanna Ray. John Ray had moved to Missouri from Tennessee in the late 1840s as a widower, and he had brought his daughter Elizabeth with him. Roxanna Gizzard married William Steele in 1837 and moved to Missouri with him in 1840. After William Steele died in 1848, Roxanna married John Ray in 1849 and had six more children with him.
God, no.
No, thank
you. Not in that tiny ass house. That house was only barely bigger than our house. And it didn't have bedrooms.
There's no way I'd have a family of four in that, let alone, what, eight? Screw that. No. Is six kids plus...
Plus her what?
Yeah.
Previous.
Fuck that. No Mm-mm. way. Mm-mm.
I'm not doing that to my body. No, sir.
That would suck.
Sow your seed elsewhere.
John Ray purchased 120 acres of the Steele estate, along with two slaves previously owned by William Steele. John Ray purchased 40 acres adjacent to the old Steele estate and quickly began constructing a new house. In 1856, Ray was appointed postmaster of the Wilson's Creek Post Office, making his home the hub of the little community in the area. The house was located on the Telegraph or Wire Road, which was the major thoroughfare for all traffic in the 1850s and 1860s. The Butterfield Overland Stage used the Wire Road from 1859 to 1861, giving the Ray family a first-hand look at pioneers headed west. Unfortunately, the stage route was discontinued due to the Civil War in 1861.
Damn war ruins everything.
I know.
Fucking even... Can you believe it? A war interfered in colonization.
Yeah, I know what you're... The Civil War was preceded by conflict in the border area between Missouri and Kansas in 1854, with people from both states raiding and pillaging one another.
Is that what they were calling the border wars?
I think so, yeah. Yep.
Oh.
On August 10th, 1861, a Confederate soldier warned the Ray family that a battle was about to start, and they took shelter in their cellar for the duration of the six-hour battle. John Ray observed the battle from his porch, and the family also witnessed the house being fired upon by Union artillerymen atop Bloody Hill. Injured and dying soldiers began arriving at the Ray house soon after the battle started, and a yellow hospital flag was raised to signify it as a medical refuge. On August 10th, 1861, Mrs. Ray and Rhoda, their enslaved nanny, worked to provide aid to the wounded and dying of the Battle of Wilson's Creek. The Union commander, General Nathaniel Lyon, was killed and his body was brought to the Ray house. After being examined for wounds, the general was escorted to the home of John and Mary Phelps. Pause there, too. I talked about John and Mary Phelps, as in Phelps Grove Park. They owned the land. That's where they took his body.
Oh! Wait, no, whose body?
Nathaniel Lyon.
No, Lyon was taken to...
No, he was taken to the Ray house and cleaned up.
Yes.
From Ray house, they took him to the Phelps house in Springfield. So he went from Wilson's Creek.
Because they thought he was still alive and he was receiving medical attention, even though he was dead, at the Ray house.
Yeah. Well, they knew he was dead.
See, I was getting a different impression. No.
From what I read, they cleaned his body up and transported his body to the Phelps farm in Springfield.
Okay. I was given the impression in the chaos of war, they thought that he was wounded, mortally wounded, but wounded, and that they attempted to give him medical attention at the Ray house.
I don't know.
Why he was given the parents' bed.
Well...
I'm explaining that was my impression. You are giving me information that I was not privy to previously, therefore changing my...
It just says, after being examined for wounds, the general was escorted to the home of John and Mary Phelps. Ambulances soon began to evacuate the wounded to hospitals, and the southern dead were buried immediately.
Yes.
The Ray family lost their supplies for the winter as the soldiers took horses, hogs, chickens, and grain. This would prove to be a difficult winter for the Ray family and local residents.
And listen, did the government step in and go, hey, we took your shit, let's help you out? No, of course not. We're too busy fighting a war to care about the people whose lives we're ruining in the fucking process. Either side. I don't mean that to say, like, the Confederates are good people, but I mean, like, the human being, the human lives that were impacted. Just evil is evil, man. That's all I'm trying to say. That's it. That's all.
Yep, I get it. Now back to the main story. On Bloody Hill, Lyon's troops encountered the Missouri State Guard, and fighting broke out. The State Guard had little training and took time to organize their units. They eventually outflanked Lyon's troops and forced them to withdraw. Lyon brought in reinforcements and drove the Southerners back, but he lost the initiative and fought defensively. The outcome of the battle depended on Sigel's column. At 8 a.m., Sigel arrived at Wire Road and immediately began firing his artillery at Price's troops on Bloody Hill. However, he stopped because he couldn't tell who was on his side or not. Both sides wore different uniforms and flags could have been more helpful. Sigel placed his cavalry on the sides and most of his infantry in the road column. Unfortunately, he did not send enough soldiers to the front to guard against any surprises. Sigel's main focus was to prevent friendly fire casualties and didn't send any messengers to inform Lyon of his presence. During a battle, McCullough saw that Sigel was a threat to his army's rear. He led some soldiers into a hidden area. They charged at Sigel's troops. Sigel thought they were his troops and ordered everyone to stop firing.
Because everybody was wearing gray.
Yep. By the time he realized his mistake, it was too late. Sigel's troops panicked and fled, losing most of their guns. During the battle at Bloody Hill...
Cannons or rifles? Yeah,
the cannons. During the Battle of Bloody Hill, the Missouri State Guard attacked the Federals. Although outnumbered, the Federals held their ground with the help of their artillery. Lyon, the Federal leader, was wounded and killed while repositioning his troops, but his maneuvers succeeded in making the Southerners retreat. Price, the Southern leader, was also wounded while leading his troops. Major Samuel Sturgis took command of the Army of the West and successfully defended against a Southern attack led by McCullough and Price. The Southerners tried to turn the Federals' right flank and even made a charge into their rear, but were driven off. Sturgis decided to withdraw after achieving his mission of stunning the enemy and handled the maneuver skillfully. The Southerners launched another attack, but Sturgis left the field in good order, and the guns on Bloody Hill were silent by noon. McCullough's men were too fatigued and low on ammunition to pursue. The Federal Army retreated from Springfield to Rolla after a battle at Wilson's Creek. The Southerners held the field, but the Federals were able to safely withdraw as planned. Many soldiers died in the battle, with the Federals losing a quarter of their army and the Southerners losing over 12%. This was one of the bloodiest battles in American history at that time. The Battle of Missouri wasn't a clear win for either side, but rather an important point in their long-term struggle for control of the area. After the fight, McCullough took his Confederates back to Arkansas, while Price captured a Federal garrison in Lexington with the Missouri State Guard. However, Price didn't have the resources to sustain his army, and two-thirds of the men deserted. For the Federals, the fight was a distraction from their main mission of opening the Mississippi River. They couldn't do so with a hostile force behind them. They eventually drove Price back with John C. Fremont and later Major General Samuel R. Curtis leading the maneuvers that led to their victory at Battle of Pea Ridge, Arkansas. After that, Federal control of Missouri was only threatened by raids and guerrillas, but never seriously challenged. Missouri was a state deeply divided during the Civil War. In October, a faction of the state legislature passed an ordinance of secession, leading Missouri to become a Confederate state in name. However, in reality, the Confederate government of Missouri operated as a government in exile.
Around, I Missouri remained neutral.
It did, but this is just for like a minute because of the federal, of the state government.
Yeah, this, I thought the state government remained neutral. But you're saying a faction.
Right.
Meaning like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz.
Well, in this case, the governor.
Secede.
Yeah.
The governor.
Right.
Okay. Well, we don't care about those bitches anyway, no. So.
Around 40,000 Missouri Confederates bravely fought in other states such as Arkansas, Louisiana, and the Indian Territory, as well as states east of the Mississippi River. They only returned home when the war came to an end. On the other side, more than 60,000 Missourians fought for the Union cause, with some even accompanying Major William T. Sherman on his famous march to the sea. Regardless of whether they wore blue or gray uniforms, all Missourians embarked on a long and arduous journey that began on a sweltering day in August 1861 at Wilson's Creek, where gunfire erupted amid scattered oaks and tall prairie grass, staining the water with blood.
Yeah.
And now for the hauntings.
Yes!
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then I'm sure we'll talk about our little trip there.
Yeah!
After, so. The Wilson's Creek National Battlefield is a place of great significance, both historically and culturally. It was the site of a major battle during the American Civil War, and it has been preserved as a national park since 1960. But
I want to add to that. I was reading the plaque at the Nathaniel Lyon Memorial.
Yeah.
It's recreation of the battlefield began like within years of the Civil War ending.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like they, I don't mean recreation like picnics in part. Well, they did have picnics and things, but in like memorial.
Right.
Of, it was mostly veterans of the battle coming back to be, to pay respects and things and bringing their families. And then eventually it became
a national park.
National park. But
right.
Before it was a national park, it was still being memorialized. I think they built the Nathaniel Lyon marker was built in the 20s or 30s.
Yeah.
So.
Well, officially.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm just saying, yeah, like, I wanted saying. To make yeah. note of that.
But it is also a place of mystery where ghostly apparitions are said to roam the fields and forests, and where the spirits of those who fought and died still linger.
Yep.
So sit back, relax, and prepare to be transported to a world beyond the veil of reality. The battle was a bloody affair with over 2,500 casualties on both sides. The Confederate victory at Wilson's Creek helped to secure Missouri for the Confederacy in the early stages of the war. But the history of Wilson's Creek goes back even further than the Civil War. The area was once home to the Osage and Delaware Native American tribes, who used the creek as a source of water and food. Later, it became a popular spot for settlers who built homes and farms along its banks. Today, the battlefield is a testament to the bravery and sacrifice of those who fought and died there, and a reminder of the complex history of our nation. The legend of the ghostly soldier at Wilson's Creek National Battlefield has been passed down for generations. According to the tale, a soldier from the Civil War still roams the battlefield, unable to rest in peace.
Just one?
Visitors have reported seeing a figure wearing a tattered uniform and carrying a musket marching through the fields in the dead of night. There's more than just one. It's just like a...
I know.
One of the more prominent...
It's like the Lady in White. Like, right. How many Which, fucking cemeteries...
We'll get to the Lady in White.
Yes.
I think... You see that this one... I've already prepared my next episode. I think there's one in the next episode, too.
You were talking about Lady in White, yeah. So...
Because there's always a lady.
There's always a lady in white. Never fails. Or a blue lady.
Yeah.
Or both. God forbid. Anyway,
What did I say?
Roaming through the fields at night.
Yeah, unable to rest in peace. Visitors have reported seeing a figure wearing a tattered uniform and carrying a musket marching through the fields in the dead of night. Some say that the soldier was killed during the Battle of Wilson's Creek and his spirit never left the site.
Who's there at nighttime? It closes at sunset.
People walk in there. I mean, it's not hard to walk through the...
Yeah, but I'm such a rule follower. I would be so afraid of the cops getting called on me.
There are people that freaking go to graveyards when graveyards are closed. They go through park. They sit in parks overnight. I mean, cops don't patrol 24/7.
Yeah, but if a neighbor's like, hey, there's some hooligans up to no good.
I mean, yeah. Who knows?
Anyway.
Lost my place again.
I'm sorry. In the dead of night.
Some say that the soldier was killed during the Battle of Wilson's Creek and his spirit never left the site. Others believe that he is searching for something, perhaps a lost comrade or an important item that was left behind. Whatever the reason for his haunting, the ghostly soldier remains one of the most intriguing and chilling stories associated with the battlefield. Another chilling encounter reported at Wilson's Creek is that of a soldier who appears to be missing his legs. Visitors have reported seeing him crawling across the battlefield, desperately searching for his missing limbs. His haunting cries can be heard echoing across the fields late at night. As visitors explore the Wilson's Creek National Battlefield, they may catch glimpses of a ghostly encampment in the distance.
Oh.
The apparition is said to resemble a Civil War era military camp, complete with the tents and soldiers going about their business.
Fascinating.
However, upon closer inspection, the camp disappears into thin air, leaving visitors with a sense of unease. Some witnesses have reported hearing the sounds of horses and cannons coming from the ghostly encampment, adding to the eerie atmosphere. Others have claimed to see ghostly figures moving about the camp, dressed in tattered uniforms and carrying muskets. Whether these sightings are the result of overactive imagination or something more supernatural remains a mystery. The Wilson's Creek National Battlefield is home to many ghost stories, but none are as intriguing as the legend of the Lady in White.
Oh, fucking hell! Jesus Christ, there weren't any women that died!
I know, but this is a story. Doesn't necessarily have to be true, but I like telling the ghost stories.
Okay.
According to local lore, the ghostly figure of a woman dressed in a long white gown has been seen wandering the battlefield, often disappearing without a trace.
Oh my god, no way! I'm sorry.
Despite numerous attempts to identify the Lady in White, her true identity remains a mystery.
She's the Lady in White. That is her identity.
Could you imagine if there's like one Lady in White that just goes to different spots?
Like the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
She fucking goes under tunnels and pops up in other lakes all around the world.
Right. Some speculate that she was a nurse during the Civil War. Which I don't think they had nurses.
They did, but they weren't. It was the wives of the farmers and the plantation owners.
And the slaves.
For whom the battles happened to take place on their fields.
Yep.
The Carrie McGavicks and the et ceteras.
Yeah. Anyways, while others believe that she may have been a soldier's wife or even a victim of a tragic love affair. Whatever her story may be, her haunting presence continues to captivate visitors to the Wilson's Creek National Battlefield.
Did she drown in the creek?
Probably.
It's interesting. It's interesting that there are no Native American ghosts.
I know.
Around about these parts. They're all...
White people.
White people in Victorian dress. And say what you will, but Civil War uniforms, you could technically say, were Victorian dress because it happened during Victorian times, or what we call Victorian times. But there's no, like, Native American ghosts wandering the creek looking for their family that got fucking shipped out of town.
It could be.
For no reason.
They're probably better at hiding than those other dumbass ghosts.
That's a racist but fair point.
It's true, though. The Wilson's Creek National Battlefield is steeped in history and legend. The ghost soldier who taunts the battlefield is just one of many eerie tales that have been told about this site. Visitors have reported seeing a ghostly encampment and the mysterious lady in white, adding to the spooky atmosphere of the area. Whether you believe in ghosts or not, a visit to the Wilson's Creek National Battlefield is sure to be an unforgettable experience. The beautiful landscape combined with the rich history and the legends make it a must-visit destination for anyone interested in the supernatural or American history. If you walked through Wilson's Creek National Battlefield in the dark, would it make you afraid-ish?
I would say afraid-ish. But I'm less and less afraid of the dead than I am of the living nowadays.
This is true, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd rather talk to the dead.
I've come to the realization that I'm much more comfortable around the dead than I am around most of the living, which is kind of sad.
I get it. I mean.
But, yeah.
I talked to my phone while I was working
today.
Yeah,
that was weird. That was weird.
Anyways. That's pretty cool, though, but.
So there's this app
that
we have on our phones.
It's called Ghost
called
Tube.
Ghost Tube. They have several different variations of this app. It's created by a couple from Australia. They're YouTubers that they do ghost, I don't want to say hunting. I mean, that is the term that's generally used, but it's not like Zach Bagans where he's rifle loaded hunting for ghosts. They go out and they introduce themselves and try to contact and see what happens. So they developed these apps using the technology that exists within your phone.
Right.
In an effort to see if you can, allegedly, to see if you can reach beyond the veil.
Right.
And one of the apps, the basic app, GhostTube, has a dictionary with, if you have the free version, I think it's 5,000 words. If you pay for it, it's 1,000 words. Or did I say 5,000? I meant 500.
500 words. And if you pay for it, it's 1,000.
It's 1,000 words. And each word is assigned like a specific electromagnetic frequency. Yep. So if, in theory, if a ghost wants to talk to you, they can create the frequency that corresponds to the word. The thing is, how does the ghost know what frequency corresponds to the word? Don't know. But also, ghosts, if ghosts are real, they're non-corporeal and are not bound to the same constraints as the human body and therefore the human mind. So maybe they can know the things that we cannot know. So, you know, I remain agnostic, but I'm just saying, in theory, anything is possible. So everything is possible.
It's just fun to play with.
But yes, so you could, in theory, talk to spirits. We went to Pythian Castle. We did the ghost tour on that. And I got what I personally thought were... There's some nonsense.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of what I would consider, like, relevant responses on my GhostTube app. I told you we were walking past down the hallway on the second story, past what I believe she said were the older women slept.
Right.
And there was one bedroom door that was, like, open. And the room didn't have a bed in it, but you could see, like, there was a fireplace. And you could kind of picture how the room may have been laid out. Like, there was some sparse furniture in the room. But the door was open. So I, like, looked in the room. I didn't, like, walk in or anything. I just, like, literally looked in the doorway. And as I was doing that, my phone goes, sleeping.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
And then I'm like, oh, sleeping. Okay, move on to the next situation.
Right.
So to me, that's relevant. You got some stuff at the battlefield while we were there with my grandma and my aunt.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I was just, like, listening, and all of a sudden it goes, what is your name? Who are you? I tell it my name and stuff. And then it goes, I can't remember everything.
Something about dirty.
Yeah, I said, yeah, it's a crazy job. Well, something led to that. And then, yeah, it's a crazy job. And then it said dirty because, you know, obviously my LLV is
filthy, very
dusty.
When was the last time I had a car wash?
I don't know. I need to, like, freaking run it through a car wash and, like, spray the inside of it out.
Anyways, probably so ruin it.
I wasn't recording anything. And then I started recording. I hit record while it was stopped safely. And then I can't remember. I have it recorded.
It told you to stop recording.
Yeah, so I was talking to it, and then it said, stop recording. I was like, okay. But I still recorded a little bit more. There was just a lot of, like, basically a two-way conversation.
Yeah.
It was like talking to somebody. It was really weird. Take what you want from that, but it's just a fun thing to play with.
Yeah.
If you're into that. It's very cheap. Like, I pay
$2.99 a month for one app. I pay yearly
for one.
Oh, so you did get the yearly.
I've had it for over a year.
Oh, okay.
The Ghost Tube one.
So one app is either $2.99 a month or $12.99 for the year. Or you can pay for the whole suite for the year for like $40.
Which is cheap.
And there's like four apps now?
Five apps.
Five apps?
No.
There's GhostTube, GhostTube Vox, GhostTube SLS, and GhostTube Seer.
Yeah.
Is there one that I'm missing?
No, I think.
So the GhostTube Seer, that's their newest one, and it draws pictures. It uses the same technology as the GhostTube with like the electromagnetic frequencies, but it uses an AI art generator to create pictures.
And I've gotten some weird
one that I can't get out of my mind. And of course, like in my frame of mind right now, everything is about Justin. Like literally everything. And I'm trying not to like go like that.
Right.
But that one that you got, that at first I was like, oh, that looks like an office building with cubicles. And then I was like, oh, maybe it's a prison.
Right. Yeah, it did kind of look like a prison.
Yeah, with people in the little cubicles. And then,
was it after that I got like a somebody standing on like clouds or something?
Yeah.
That was pretty weird.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. If you guys want to check it out, it's GhostTube.
We are not sponsored.
No.
Amy and Jared, if you want to sponsor us.
Yeah. No, but they don't sponsor us. We're not sponsored by anybody right now.
No. I went to Eureka Springs.
Yes, that on was so
July
cool.
1st for a gal's trip. And we had some interest. We basically all downloaded the app on our phones. And pretty much just, we stayed at the Basin Park Hotel. And we pretty much just had our phones running like the entire time we were inside the hotel. In the room. We went to the little Jackrabbit speakeasy lounge thing and we sat around in there for a while.
Where was that?
It's the game room.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
With the...
We didn't go in there when we
stayed. The glass ceiling. No. Yeah. But we went in there. We ended up getting locked out of our hotel room.
Yeah, I saw the video. It was
we had the key.
Yeah, I saw
we that. Had the key and we were standing. I like double checked. I was like, are we in front of the wrong room? Like, are we on the wrong floor? No, I checked. I compared. I tried to unlock the door. I could not unlock the door. So I handed the keys off to the next person. I just was like, somebody take these keys. They couldn't unlock the door. All four of us tried to unlock that door. We stood there. It took over 2 minutes. I have 2 minutes of video recorded on my phone. It took longer than that because I only started recording a little bit into the ordeal. We could not get that fucking door to unlock. The GhostTube app said the word idiots.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then it said blessed and the door unlocked.
That is crazy.
Dude, I'm sorry. And then there was, I don't know, did I tell the story about the Bible on the shoes?
On the podcast?
Have I told that story on the podcast?
I don't.
I don't care. If I've told the story before, I don't care. You can hear it again. We woke up the next morning. We're all getting ready for breakfast. We're just kind of like taking our time. We're going to go down, have breakfast at the balcony bar at the Basin Park. It was a shitty continental breakfast. Bullshit. But anyway. So we're all just kind of like doing our thing, brushing teeth, washing faces, just literally moseying around the hotel room. Somebody's sitting on the floor, like going through her bag. Somebody's in the bathroom. And then two of us, I'm standing. I'm actively paying attention to Ghost Tube and carrying a conversation with the girl sitting on the floor. She stops and goes, is anybody else seeing this? And I'm like, what? She goes and points in the direction of one of the chairs. One of the other women had taken her sandals off and like just kind of scooted them under a chair. You know how you kind of like kick your shoes off?
Yeah.
Pop, pop. On top of her sandals, underneath this chair, was an open Bible.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was open to, I was like, Luke, the book of Luke, I think, chapter 2, which was the birth story of the Christ child.
That is crazy.
Yeah. None of, again, like, maybe I'm a little too trusting. I was in that room the entire time with these other women, except for a brief moment when I went in the bathroom, closed the door to pee. Other than that, and to change my clothes, which happened at the same time. I peed and changed my clothes within the same, like, 60-second time span. Other than that, I was in the room with them the entire time. I did not see anybody go into that drawer and pull that Bible out.
Yeah.
I didn't hear anything. The drawer wasn't exactly easy to open and close. It had those little tassel handles that, like, jiggle.
Oh, yeah.
When you open it. Yeah. So you would have heard it.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. Why the fuck was a Bible open?
Yeah, that is weird.
To this, the story of the birth of the Christ child.
Who knows?
Weird shit.
Ghostly shit.
But anyway, all that to say, you recorded some shit. I also recorded some stuff, but I wasn't really getting anything at the battlefield through Ghost Tube, yeah. But you were.
I got a name. I think one of the first videos I recorded, it said the name Benjamin.
Which, I mean, like one of the most common names. So you could imagine there was probably several men that died or were at that battle named Benjamin.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. I felt, especially when we were on the Bloody Hill.
Right.
While we were walking to and from the Nathaniel there,
yeah.
Memorial. I felt like there were 1,000 eyes on me.
Yeah.
Looking out at me from the woods.
It's pretty heavy.
It was very heavy. Especially around the sinkhole. I mean, even my mom, my Capricorn mother, got emotional at the sinkhole. And, you know, for good reason, you know, some shits.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was, I felt like I was being watched almost the entirety of the time that we were in the park, but especially the last stop that we made.
Yep.
What's the house?
The Ray House?
The Ray House. That one felt like comfortable.
Yeah.
But still watched.
Yeah.
Yep. But if you think about it, like the initial skirmish of the Wilson Creek battle happened in their cornfield, which was right behind the house.
Yeah.
So there's that. That place is just, like, full of energy.
Yeah.
And I know you and I, we've shared an experience that we didn't even know that each other was having, driving ZZ, which runs north-south along the western edge of the battlefield.
Yeah.
Seeing pretty much in the same spot, the same soldier. I think you see more than I do, yeah. Which is interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. People think we're crazy. Oh, I don't care.
I don't fucking care about shit anymore.
Take it what you will.
People. You think I'm crazy? You think I'm psychotic? I don't care.
Anyways.
I'm not arrogant enough to think that I know everything and that what I've experienced is the truth. I understand that there are things that, like, your sympathetic nervous system and the power of suggestion. And I don't know the name of the phenomenon, but, like, when the human mind wants to see things it recognizes, right. Mm-hmm. And make meaning out of the meaningless.
Yep.
Like, when you see faces and static and shit. Yeah. Like, I understand those phenomenons exist. But also, anything is possible. If nothing is possible, anything is possible.
I still think that when you die, you go to another dimension and they're chilling out, doing their thing. Or there's another dimension. Like if you see, like you think you see a ghost, but it's somebody on the other side thinking they see another ghost and it's you.
That's the premise of the movie Ghosts.
Yeah. And if you see...
With Nicole Kidman. Was it Ghosts?
No, that was No, it's not called The Ghost, but I know what you're talking about. Yes. The kid, I think in the beginning... Not in the beginning, but the kid, her kids see somebody and the real life
the
kids...
The others.
Yeah, the others. Yeah.
That was such a good movie. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was such a good movie. That is exactly the premise of the movie, The Others. Yes. But I don't know if you realized last night when I had the candle burning on the dresser and I was like, I kept holding the sheet up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking about. It's called The Veil.
Yeah.
And so there's like theories about, I mean, even fucking, what's his face? The astrophysicist that was in the wheelchair. Stephen Hawking, thank you. He had a theory about dimensions. Wasn't
recently because he's dead.
String theory. Huh? What?
You said recently.
Yeah, he died within like the last few years.
Yeah. Oh, anyways.
Is what I meant. Recently, okay. He recently died.
Yeah.
Is what I meant. Like, not fucking Albert Einstein. Okay. But also not Neil deGrasse Tyson because he's still alive. I was trying to make that. Anyway, he, at string theory, I think.
Yeah.
Is hit with the different dimensions and the universe bubbles and shit. Right.
And that's how Bigfoot comes and goes as he pleases.
Loch Ness Monster.
Without being seen.
Loch Ness Monster. Yep. Honestly, paganism, there's a concept is called crossing the veil, or like when the veil thins.
Yep.
So like in May and November, May 1st, November 1st. Yep. So May Day, Beltane, whatever you want to call it, depending on where you are in the world, call it different things. And then Halloween, Samhain, Dia de los Muertos. Yep. Those two times of the year is when the veil is thinnest. And that's when the veil, it almost doesn't exist. Like if you picture in Harry Potter when Sirius is killed by what's her face, and he just kind of like slips through the curtain.
Yep.
It's like that. You can just like pass right through. The theory goes anyway.
Yeah. Anyways.
And that's like, yeah, Bigfoot is an interdimensional being that just kind of like is here and there and everywhere. The Loch Ness Monster. Aliens. Yep. I have my theory about aliens and Atlantis and Lemuria. Maybe I'll talk about that on the podcast someday. But I've said enough crazy things for one night.
Anyways, yep. Hopefully people like this episode. A lot of history.
A lot of nonsense.
Well, I did cut a lot of history because there was history. It went by... Like each general, each individual that was in the war.
Oh.
I cut all that out. I cut because there was like history of like Price and history of all the generals and all the people who were all the major players.
Right.
But I just went with the major battle.
Which is exactly what the battlefield does. Yeah. They kind of condense it down into, like, here's the major groups.
Right.
And boom, here we go.
Because there was a story of how Siegel, how he came to the battle with his German, because he's a German, and they were German immigrants.
Yes.
That he,
from St. Louis.
From St. Louis. They all got together with Lion.
Yes.
And did all that
they
stuff.
They formed an alliance, a la Dwight and Jim.
Yep. And so, yeah, it's just a lot of history that would have taken, it could be its own entire podcast.
Yeah. Which so. I'm sure there are Civil War podcasts that break that shit down.
Yeah.
We are not that.
No.
We are a general history and paranormal.
Yes.
Emphasis on the... We try to have the emphasis on the paranormal.
But it's mostly history, apparently.
But I'm mostly the paranormal one, because I'm not normal.
Yeah. Anyway. is there anything else we want to talk about?
No, we just want to say that, again, this episode is dedicated to Justin.
Yep.
In loving memory.
Yes, Ashley's brother. In loving memory of Justin. And
miss you, buddy.
Yes. So, yeah, it's been a long month.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
Fucking worst summer. I hate summer.
Yeah.
I hate summer so much. And this has just been... If I ever needed a reason to hate summer, this summer is the reason to hate summer. I cannot fucking wait. Wake me up when fucking September ends. That song has never been more poignant. I just wake me up on October 1st when I can put pumpkins and shit out.
Yeah. Anyways, if you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about or know anybody who does, please email me at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com, Instagram and Facebook at afraidishpodcast. The website is down for now, obviously. More
still
bullshit because I can't find time to take care of it.
Fucking hell, who can?
All the links will be in the show notes. I do have this on YouTube as audio but not video. You can listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and almost anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, SiriusXM discontinued and is shutting down Stitcher as of August 29th, 2023. So you would have to listen another way if you are a Stitcher listener.
I'm guessing nobody uses Stitcher, which is why they're shutting it down.
I don't know. There's a Stitcher, like people pay... Sometimes they'll listen to Stitcher.
Yeah, I pay for Spotify. Premium. But, like, so, if only 5 people pay for Spotify, Spotify's going to shut down.
Yeah, I don't know why they're shutting it down.
Because nobody uses it. Because everybody uses Apple and Spotify, which is not right, but...
Apple, Google, Spotify.
Please, Google.
Some other... Yeah.
Oh.
It's kind of shitty because it keeps going down sometimes, but...
Spotify crashes on me every fucking day, so.
I never.
But only at work.
I never have an issue.
It only crashes on me at work on my tablet, so it's probably my tablet.
Probably.
But, yeah, I can't use my phone because every time my fucking phone rings, Spotify gets interrupted, so I have to have a neutral device.
Yeah, I never have a problem with it.
Well, lucky you.
Anyways.
There's nothing like having your massage interrupted with a ringtone.
That sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Also rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify. 5 stars, please.
Unless you hate me, then just be honest.
Stop it. And until next time, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish of what's in it.
Bye.
Okay, bye.